And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. My name is Daryl Ong, and you're tuned in to Bar None, a weekly sports show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. This week, our very special guest is Jasman Jaffar, an inspiring GT race driver who started go-karting at the age of 7 and then won his first race a year later, at 8 years old. He's also the youngest professional racer to win the Formula BMW Asia, the first Asian to finish vice champion in the British Formula 3 Championship, and in 2015, he was the first Malaysian to win the Monaco Grand Prix. Jasman today shares with us how he got his head start in racing, his grooming experience in the Petronas Talent Development Program, and his big win in the Monaco Grand Prix. First, he brings us up to speed about his journey in motorsports so far.
I think the journey is still ongoing. I'm still only 25. There's still a lot more to achieve, a lot of races to compete, and I mean, my experience still grows and I'm enjoying every bit of it.
Yeah, I mean, 25 is still considered young, right?
Ish, yeah. I mean, a lot of the drivers are getting intend to be a lot younger now, that they seem to graduate into the pinnacle levels a lot earlier. But yeah, 25 is considered young. You know, now I'm doing sports car racing with McLaren, and yeah, there's exciting races coming up ahead, and hopefully, you know, we keep the flag flying high.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about how you were first introduced to racing. Like I said, you started go-karting age of 7. I was probably still playing in the sandpit then. yeah, so what made you want to become a race driver?
Well, to be honest, it was by luck and by chance, actually. No one in the family was involved in motor racing, but we all had interest in motor racing. I collected little Hot Wheel cars and Tamiya cars, and I've always had the passion for cars. One day, a very close friend of my late father invited us to a go-kart track in Shah Alam. I was about 7, 6 and a half. And I arrived there and I saw kids my age racing. They vary between 7 to 10 years old, you know, little kids, big helmets, big racing suits, the racing went on, you know. And, you know, my dad saw how much I was really into it, and he said, hey, do you want to have a go? You know, you seem to be loving
it.
So I started the following week in a little Puffo 40cc kart, which is for short people like me at the time. Yeah, and I never looked back. You know, it was a hobby every weekend, and then it became Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then it became Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday after school. And I climbed up the ladder and did the national championship, the Asian championship.
Right.
And then I started doing European races. And I told my dad at 9, you know what? I want to be a racing driver professionally. You know, I want to be in Formula One. Mm. And he had a shock of his life. And it wasn't easy going through mom, but you know what? I am where I am today, you know? The passion drives me.
I mean, once you won your first race, I'm sure that was the moment where you thought, okay, you know, this can be a full-time and a serious career for me, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, it wasn't very easy. I think motorsport was growing in Malaysia tremendously. We had Serpang built in my early stages of my career. Mm-hmm. Alex was in Formula One in 2001, early 2000s. So it was growing enormously. We had huge grids, huge interest, and also corporate sponsors being involved at the time. But seeing it as a professional career, no one has done it yet at the time. So we just took a year at a time along, you know. We did it because we loved the sport, you know, me and my late father, and also the support from my family. And I never thought till today I was fighting for a championship in Formula 3, and then winning Monaco Grand Prix, testing Formula One, and I've enjoyed the sacrifices I made to get to where I am today.
I bet it happened all very quickly for you, right?
It's like it did.
Race after race, win after win.
It did. I mean, one of my main targets early part of my career was to join Petronas, which they had the talent program. I was with them for about 7 years. That's when I furthered my racing. And I left Petronas after I did the Formula Renault 3.5. Or we went our separate ways. And I joined Mercedes-AMG to do my first year of GTs, which I finished second. And now I'm with McLaren.
Cool. No doubt racing is a dangerous sport. You're a huge fan. I mean, your childhood hero was Anton Senna. Right, who perished in the San Marino Grand Prix in 94.
Correct.
Did this this event make you consider your choice of racing professionally, you know, and consider the dangers of the sport?
Yeah, it does. It's in my mind every day, but, you know, I think we cannot pull ourselves back simply because, you know, Ayrton died. You know, we must not forget, you know, Jules Bianchi died 3 years ago in a crash in Japan, and all of these unexpected circumstances tend to happen. But the sport is always constantly improving in safety enhancements and equipment and so on and so forth. Now Formula One is introducing halos to protect drivers' heads and helmets. Doesn't look great now, but eventuality, safety comes first, right? Same in GT and sports cars racing. Now we have carbon seats that covers all the way around to your head and stuff. And the safety aspects has gone a long way since 94.
Yeah, definitely. I just recently watched a documentary, The Days of Anton Senna, Days of Niki Lauda. It was a lot more raw back then, right?
Exactly. Racing. Exactly. I mean, those cars were, you know, 1,000 horsepower, just a seatbelt and a helmet and drive, you know.
Yeah.
those guys were real, they were fearless.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the word
fearless.
For it.
Yeah.
Fearless and brave.
Correct.
Jasmine, you were given your international license at 14.
Yeah.
Normally, people get it at 15.
Yeah.
Right? How did that come about, man?
Well, actually, during my time 10 years ago now, it was 16 until recently they changed to 15. At that time, me and my dad, we were contemplating of either furthering karting in Europe or choosing to do Formula BMW. And we thought the best step was to do Formula BMW. I felt that I was ready to do it and so on. But I didn't have a license to do it, which is International C. So we wrote a letter with the support of AAM, our automobile association, to the FIA to get an exemption. And the first reply was a yes, was okay. And me and my dad were
like, is this real?
This is real? Like, it's too good to be true, you know? So we gathered, you know, some little sponsors we had, just enough to do the championship, which we won on the first year. And, you know, it's incredible, you know, from the time the year before where we were struggling to decide and, you know, where we're heading to winning the championship, it was a turning point in my career.
Definitely the good choice. But what, again, made you choose that instead of karting?
Well, looking back at it now, I think it's also maturity and experience. Although I was 14, I have done a certain amount of racing. And I wanted to prove to people that I was ready, and to prove to them is by proving them my results. So I let my results do most of the talking than telling people, hey guys, you know, I can race, you know, it doesn't prove anything. So that's how we went along.
Can you just give us some of, you know, you've been racing professionally for about 10 years right now?
Yeah.
What are some of your highlights to date?
Oh, winning Monaco Grand Prix was special.
And Monaco is actually one of the hardest tracks in the world, right?
Yeah. I raced there 3 times now.
Right.
2013, 14, 15. And I finished third twice and won it on my third attempt. And funny enough, on the third attempt, before the start of the race, I had a problem with my car. And I thought, you know, luck wasn't on my side and so on and so forth. And this was before the green light of the race. The mechanics got their way around it, fixed the problem, and green flag. you know, I didn't have the best of starts, but led the race. And then there was a safety car, the race stopped, and there was drama that weekend, let's put it that way.
Right.
For me.
Hectic weekend.
Hectic weekend, to the point that I actually won the race. But yeah, that was...
Yeah, you know the old saying goes, right? The bigger pressure you're under, the better you perform.
Absolutely right.
staying with Monaco and the Grand Prix, yeah, it being the hardest track and the most difficult track in the world, can you give us some of your thoughts on Monaco and what sets it apart from all the other tracks?
I think what we see on TV is normally the glitz and glamour of Monaco. You know, you see the yachts and the stunning background and so on. But the eye on the detail of the track, the different gradients, the cambers and the corners, those kind of things is not something you get in a normal circuit.
Right.
You know, it's a street circuit and there's no room for error.
Right.
Small little error, you're in the wall and you're out. And you don't have much time to fix the car. So driving to perfection is always key there, and keeping yourself clean and stay cool all the time. Because if you're pressured, you make mistake. If you overpush, you make mistake.
Because the tracks are pretty thin, right?
Exactly. So to stay content and obviously to stay consistent is the key for Monaco. But hey, winning it with
you've done it, right?
is awesome, right? It felt like yesterday, to be honest with you. But it's my proudest moment.
Your favorite track is the Valencia track, actually.
Correct, yeah. We used to spend loads of time in Formula 3 there, practicing and stuff. I'm a big fan of high-speed corners.
Okay.
You know, I still feel that I can improve in that areas, but Valencia has the right... mixtures of high speed and low speed, which is something I like.
It's your favorite. Have you won it?
No. Unfortunately, the year that I joined the championship, they didn't have the race there. So maybe in the near future, you never know.
Cool. You've been in races with some of the top motorsport racers so far. Who would you say is your toughest competitor?
Good question, actually. I would say Carlos Sainz Jr.
Oh, okay.
Who's now with Renault.
Yeah.
Carlos was...
You raced against him. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
In Formula 3. We were teammates. And he was, I think, two years younger than me. And this kid came... I mean, he had the surname, right? But, you know, he had this big Red Bull setting and, you know, he had the package.
Right.
Right? And here I am, a Malaysian boy, you know? But his knowledge... of setting up, I think was groomed by his father. He was very clever in setting up the car, and we were challenging each other every single session, whether it was free practice, official, unofficial, race day, non-race day. We were pushing each other to reach into greater heights. Mm. And I think that year it improved me so much as a racing driver. We raised the game, we raised the bar. Although I think he didn't have the best of years towards the second half. That's when I finished second in the championship. I think he finished fourth. And Carlos was one of the best competitors I had.
Just talking about teammates in motorsport racing, right? How much of a teammate is the other person? Because, you know, it's all about yourself, right? It's all about how fast you finish a lap, how fast you bring the car across the finishing line. And there are cases of where you know, teammates actually slowed down and let, you know, the other person pass. But yeah, how much of a teammate was he?
That's a very good question, actually. Well, at the end of the day, it's how much of a team player you want to be,
right?
You know, secondly, are you racing for the team or you're racing for yourself? You know, if you're fighting for the championship, or, you know, you're helping the team to win the championship. Mm. So different circumstances comes into play, and you want what's best as priority for your career, and you know, play it right and don't let it overtake you.
Mm. Jasmine, you were noticed by one of the largest motorsport sponsors, Petronas. You were part of their talent development program back in 2013. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about that experience, kind of like a grooming ground of sorts.
Yeah, I was... I joined Petronas at 2010. And that gave me the chance to further my racing. Petronas was attached to Mercedes.
Yeah.
And I had the chance to to work with Mercedes in the simulator program. We had 6 days of Formula One testing, fitness, and so on and so forth. And that molded me to a complete racing driver. Obviously, without their program then, I wouldn't be where I am today. Mm. But it was also a learning curve because I don't think Petronas groomed someone before. I think they've done motorbike riders, but not drivers. So drivers was a different perspective. There was a few rovers in the program. I still wish the program was still around because right. I think it'd be good for the country. But it was fantastic.
How big is the success rate of people that actually joined the program that actually made it out?
I don't know actually. To be honest with you, in terms of bike riders, yeah, they've got riders who graduated and have a sustainable career. But in terms of racing drivers, I think I was the only one. Okay. Now in sports cars. There was also Nabil Jeffrey, was another driver who's doing Formula 2, and the others, slightly younger and older generations, did sports cars. So, yeah, there's varies that had their careers everywhere, which is good for the sport. Mm.
I guess one Malaysian that you can look up to as a role model and a person who has made it is Alex Yong, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was the first, right? But I don't think we must forget that we have more so than Alex that has a very strong CV. I mean, Alex has a very successful career with Audi now, developing race cars and racing in big races. Well done to him. And, you know, Fairuz Fawzi, who race in the high levels of Formula, and other talents. So we have loads of talents from Malaysia that's done very well.
That's Jasman Jaffa, our very special guest on this week's Banan. Coming up, we explore his thoughts on F1 no longer being in Malaysia, the importance of preserving the racing community, how he's adapting to endurance racing, and shares with us some of the close brushes he had on the track so far. That's coming up. My name is Daryl Ong. Do stay tuned. This is Banan, PFM 89.9. PFM 89.9, you tuned in to Banan, our weekly show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. This week, we're joined by Jasman Jaffa, GT race driver, and next he shares with us what it's like working with the McLaren GT Driving Academy, the rush of being in the driver's seat of a race car, and what's next for him in the upcoming season.
...2016 was the year I finished second, and then with McLaren this year was a brand new program. I changed to a different car, which is the 650S. It hasn't been the competitive of all years, to be honest, but it has been a huge learning curve. Being with a manufacturer, working with the GT car, the sports car department, and everything, and the experience is something money can't buy. Mm.
How much do you have to adapt changing manufacturers? It's not like changing football boots, right? You're actually changing a whole different machine.
Yeah, exactly. little things like, the Mercedes was front engine and the McLaren's a rear engine. But, the eye on the detail of parts and your sitting position and the team ethics and stuff is just so different. And, the whole team, for example, now in McLaren, I think 80% is English and the rest is European. And I'm the only Asian Malaysian in the team, It's a lot to adapt to, but I think the moment you have your click, you just grow it from there.
As regular fans, we watch F1 or whatever it may be on TV, and it can be kind of deceiving, right? Even with the driver camera, right, going really fast, coming around the bends, but it doesn't really give the feel of driving in the driver's seat. I'm sure it's a lot more intense, a lot more different when you're actually sitting in the car. Take us behind the scenes. Tell us, some of the things that the camera doesn't show.
Well, adrenaline is something that takes over us an hour before, or even before the race weekend. You feel pumped, you feel excited, you feel like you want to do well. That's the first thing that takes over you. The second thing is pressure.
Okay.
Pressure to perform. Racing, it's not, obviously it's not a cheap sport. You have not a lot of chances to prove yourself. So that's your... Every race is as though it's your last race.
Right.
So your pressure to perform is always there. And lastly, we're so focused that every single distraction doesn't matter anymore. And for example, my races, we have to focus on the strategies, the fuel consumption, the pit stops and so on. And all of that, you have to time it to perfection. So, you know, you have to implant it as a habit in your brain already.
Right.
So all of that, as a racing driver, you have to tick all that boxes for a good preparation. On top of that, you still have to see your media and your sponsors. You know, you have to entertain guests because those are the guys that are paying the bills, right? So you have both sides. You have to entertain. At the same time, you have to learn to switch to be focused. So maintaining that, and also, you know what? You got to enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, enjoy what you do, pressure to perform, you know, spending time with your sponsors, then, you know, don't bother doing it if you're not enjoying it. So I enjoy doing it, even though, you know, sometimes I leave the racetrack at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. But looking back, I enjoyed the whole day being there.
So. Yeah. Sounds like you don't have much free time on your hands.
No, the traveling takes a lot of my time, to be honest. But... yeah, it's something that I'm used to now.
All right, so you kind of joined endurance racing this year, specifically meant to test the durability and equipment and the endurance of the driver especially.
Correct.
Something you've been focusing on for a few seasons?
Yeah. Formula racing back then was, or a couple of years ago, was more so on sprint racing. Yeah. As we watched on Formula One, it's an hour and a half sprint racing. So endurance, we do a lot more. The shorter races are 3 hours. We have the 6 hours, 12 hours, and 24. The 24-hour races are the jewel races. So those are
jewel races.
Yeah, those are the ones that you score big points.
Okay.
A lot of the manufacturers put money into it, and that's the one you want to win the big prize.
Right.
So there's a build up to it. You know?
And that one's a team effort, right?
Yeah.
It's not you in the driver's seat for 24 hours.
So that you have to be a huge team player, prepare together with the team and so on and so forth. So 24-hour races, we drive over almost 7-8 hour
shifts,
driving almost, time. Right. So 2 hour shifts. And it's mentally challenging.
But I'm sure.
Yeah.
Physically as well, right?
Yeah. But the satisfaction of crossing that finish line after you finish, it's on another. It's another planet. You know.
So you prefer endurance racing now to?
I wouldn't say prefer. It's a whole new spectrum of racing. You know, that I never thought that I enjoyed. I would enjoy it this much.
Okay.
And you know, GT is growing enormously. Everywhere, you know, in Europe, in America, in Asia. I think fans love the cars and the sound. And hey, you know, my last race, there was 180,000 fans, you know, that's amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Racing is a cruel sport. One small mistake, understeer and oversteer, can cost you the race. Even more than the race, sometimes can cost you your life, right? Can you tell us some of you know, the close brushes you had with, you know, life-threatening and risky situations?
I touch wood, you know, I haven't gone that far.
That's good.
I had a big one a few years ago, in two occasions. One was in Formula 3, where I had a big crash in the wet, where our visibility was quite poor. It was a qualifying session, which I ended up in the wall. I couldn't feel my legs.
Oh, man.
And I thought, you know, that was a very good. I was extracted out of the car. And that was a scary moment. But my legs were just severely bruised, iced and painkillers. But
right.
I still raced.
Well, you got up pretty light, I guess.
Yeah. And then a few years ago, in World Series, I had a big one in Monza, which I ended up in the wall, crashing to another guy. Same thing. It was just bruises on my shoulders and arms. But God's protecting me, you know.
And I guess the cars nowadays are meant to be, you know, top-notch safety, right? Safety features.
It is. But, you know, you can't run away from these injuries, you know, these little injuries that is bound to happen. But you know what, we know what we signed up for. So that's not going to stop me from racing.
Coming back home, Malaysia, we just had our last F1 race a few months ago. And I guess we kind of pulled the plug through the decline of viewership, ticket sales, that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on this? You know, how can we elevate again? I mean, F1 is just a part of motorsport, right? But you can't deny that F1 is the motorsport in Malaysia.
Yeah, I mean, the fans are... I think the fans has always been there. Obviously, last few years, probably the viewerships haven't been great and stuff, but the passion still lives on. Personally, I'm sad about it. You know,
I think most F1 fans in Malaysia are.
Yeah, so my... personal feelings is that I it was a childhood dream to be racing in my Malaysian Grand Prix, but hey ho, it's not the end of the world. You know, there's other pinnacle level of racing that may come in the years coming ahead. You know, we have fantastic tracks and facilities like Sepang, you know, and Johor Circuit, which is rising up, and others are also coming up, and hopefully we can nurture and grow more talents to reach into greater heights. But I sincerely hope that the industry grows to a better place for everyone.
What do you think that we, as you know, consumers of motorsports, can do as fans, you know, to elevate the sport?
The comfort zone is something we need to get out from. Why I sense that you know, we can press upon with the fact that we're as good as them, or if not better. The meaning competitors,
right.
not necessarily Europeans or whatever, just competitors. We have the talent, we have the facility, we have done it, you know. You know, Alex got there, Alex with the Audi, I'm with McLaren, and it has to be an ongoing process, you know. Like, for example, in the UK, there's so many driver development programs that nurture talents to have professional careers. Mm. But it's not just about the driver, because you need engineers and mechanics to build your car. So nurturing engineers, mechanics, and building up the whole industry together, you know. And I feel that, you know, we can do it.
Yeah.
We can do it.
I guess, you know, why it's not so accessible, I guess it's the stigma of it being a premium sport, you know. People of the upper class gets to go to the track, you know, you pay that amount for your ticket sales, that kind of thing. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's one of the biggest stumbling blocks.
I think that's the first fear, but it's a premium sport if you want it to be a premium sport, you know. Go-karting nowadays, yes, and I know it's not cheap, but even in the UK, there's club championships that people, you know, have prize winnings and having a career from it. You know, there's the automotive industry in Malaysia itself is, you know, is growing, and foreign manufacturers are having plants here, and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's entry levels of racing, grassroots developments, and those ladders is what's needed for guidance is what's needed for our next generation.
That was Jasman Jaffa, Malaysia's homegrown GT driver. If you'd like to find out more information about him, track him on his races and stuff, you can visit his website. Just head over to www.jasman.com. And with that, we've come to the end of this week's edition of Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. If you'd like to revisit the interview, do head over to our podcast at www.bfm.my. You can tweet us, we're at BFM Radio. And also don't forget that the best way to keep in touch with our latest updates is by downloading our app via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Daryl Ong, thanks for listening, and do join us again next week right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.